Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, after a wonderful 45 minutes with Kieran McLaughlin and reflecting on a career that has been absolutely as good as any horseman of his era, and frankly would stand up, to comparisons of any era. Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association, and certainly, Andy, you watched and bet on plenty of Kieran horses over the last 20 years. Good morning.
I hope the conversation doesn't deteriorate from here.
No. It just goes in a different direction.
Maybe you have some other statements, the obvious. We can get them out of the way to start the show.
Good. Nice to see the sun here after, I think rained for 48 straight hours here. It's just crazy.
Oh, we got the weather. This is really picking up.
Well, I I'm looking out my window and just, this is, we're all, semi-captive. Certainly, certainly in the city.
Well, you've been captive since you got married. So,
but I'm bummed. I guess that's, different. It's a different, some of us like that kind of captivity.
Apparently.
Well, you've been observing, you've been keeping busy, you've been entertaining the race public on Twitter with the polls and crafting discussions, but you get back to work a little bit on Friday and Saturday this week.
Sunday too. I'm going to have about 7 iPhones in my apartment, apparently.
Oh, for
performing different functions. If I can get one to clean the place, it'd be really great.
There it is. I love it. Well,
we're being on the broadcast. We're doing a show, I think, Friday. I want to say 4 to 7 on Friday. Talking about Oakland, obviously, and excellent race, the fantasy. Cards are tremendous. I mean, it's every field is chock full horses. Then we're on, I think we're on from 1 to 8 on Saturday, 1 to 8 or 1 to 8:30, at least 1 to 8. And covering the whole card basically from Oakland. Done a bunch of work. I think I'll be on to start the show for about an hour with Greg, and then on from 4 to be on the show, whatever that is, covering those stakes. And obviously the races are just every field is, 12 to 14 horses, it looks like. Looking forward to that. And then Sunday, I think we're obviously just coming to Tampa. There really isn't much racing after that, right?
No. We're gonna wait and see, what develops elsewhere. But this is clearly the culmination, anyway, of the winter spring, it seems, and it, you get the sense, Andy, that the landscape will shift after this weekend.
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see. Hopefully, we'll start learning more information on racetracks. There's a sort of, I saw a sort of confused narrative from some people, some shocking but confused narrative on the internet. All the tracks are trying to open, pretty much the ones that can, and they're trying. A lot of them are, and whether they're advertising in the press or not, and hopefully we'll start hearing if and when the tracks are going to start opening. Certainly eager to get back to work in New York, obviously in a safe manner, but hopefully that'll happen soon. Good for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Andy, you got some initial thoughts about, you know, particularly about the four big stakes when you fold the fantasy into it. Some early indications.
Oh, sure. Hang on. I'll get those PPs. I wasn't smart enough to put them by my talent here. Well, as far as the fantasy, obviously Venetian Harbor's going to be the favorite there, and she's the worst to beat. She's facing significantly stronger competition than she's ever faced before, not only, as far as horses and depth and some quality. You have to imagine that the Mott camp learned their lesson with Lake Avenue last time, and they're not going to try to rate her again because she made it clear that she's not winning a race rating, or at least a race of any, of any quality. So you imagine she's going to go, and so you're going to see if Venetian Harbor is able to harness her speed at all, and she's pretty quick. So it'll be either a very fast pace, or she's going to have to rate behind Lake Avenue. There's no slouch. She was burned in a super fast pace in her comeback race, and then burned by a foolish ride. Whether it was Joelle or the Mott camp that made that decision to raid her last time. But I like the other Bill Mott horse, Harvey's Little Goyle. I think she's very, very good. I know she's obviously a bit slower than Venetian Harbor, based on the figs, but she's going to enjoy the distance. And not to say Venetian Harbor won't. She had no problem with a mile last time, but her last race is a lot better than it looks, that one in the Busanda. I mean, she didn't break. She was wide on both turns. And that was a day that you were better off of, probably a little better off of having two off the rail. But she was wide the whole way and moving prematurely. It's just not the kind of sort of trip that wins. While the field was somewhat inferior, she still ran a respectable figure. It's only her third career start. I think she's pretty good in Harvey's Little Goyle. And this is a race that in a lot of ways mirrors what we would have seen on Friday in the Kentucky Oaks. And I'm not going to abandon her now. She should be an okay enough price. She'd probably be a third choice or somewhere in there. I really didn't see a lot of other horses that interested me that much. I mean, Kansas Kiss improved last time and ran a winning race. She ended up moving way too soon into a race that collapsed. I don't really think it was the rider's fault. I think he went after Lake Avenue, which seemed like a thing you had to do. Turned out it didn't really matter. She ran very, very well in that race. I just don't know if she's good enough. And I don't really think the British Idiom is good enough. She won the championship last year in some ways. I don't want to say by default, because she earned it with the two grade one wins in the Breeders' Cup, but that was just, I actually like Bass and those horses, but I just don't think that anybody really believed that they were going to be the top three-year-old fillies. I think that the crop has gotten much deeper since that Breeders' Cup race was run, and her return race was dismal. Finette came back and didn't run well at her next start. And she can build on it. And I have obviously a world of respect for Brad Cox, but this is a pretty stern test. She's obviously not impossible, but I probably would be inclined to stay away from her. I just didn't really have a great deal of affinity for the others in here.
Fair enough. Race
before is pretty good, Steve, too. The race that's sort of the fantasy junior, right, for the horses.
Yeah,
not
that
the horses
exactly.
This race, I know that Gargan cross-entered Ice Princess. I don't think she would either race, so I don't really care where she runs. But I know it was a very, very hard race to race before. I'm kind of interested in Comical, who I thought ran very well last time. The pace sort of fell apart, and the horse that won was Brad Cox horse, I think, off the layoff. So I thought she was kind of interesting. I'd probably fool around with her, but that's a super tough race, the Gardenia.
Jeremiah has got Al Gold's Daphne Moon.
I don't like her.
Yeah.
I bet her in the Frisette. I think I picked her in the Frisette and Demoiselle. I don't love the field she beat last time. I know the figure came up pretty good. I want to see it again. It's not impossible. Obviously not impossible. I'm not thrilled with her, though.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. It is a nice...
It's a
nice assembly.
Saturday's card. Done work on, finished up pretty much, not full finished, but look, there's an interesting allowance race before the first division, the Arkansas Derby. I think you probably might want to play against Candy Tycoon, who I think will likely be favored. I think it's a complete phony, but it's not impossible, I guess. The Arkansas Derby is this sort of funny situation where they kind of got all these horses to run so they could split the race so Charlton could come too, and that's a good thing in some ways, but there is a 12 to 14 horse field among the two divisions that would be really interesting.
Yes.
The Charlatan race is just not a particularly interesting race. It's basically a fait accompli. Now, listen, it's hard to really be overly concerned with getting the mile and eight the way he ran last time, but, you know, maybe he struggles with it, but he's going to have to not show up to win. Otherwise, he's just, you know, he's drowned this field. I'm not a Gouverneur Morris fan. I haven't ever seen his good race. I guess, the concern, you know, shoot, what does that horse do? Is he going to go strongly after Charlatan? We'll see. And you know, I know Dora could show up. I think his form has gotten a little more dubious given that Thousand Words has sort of fallen apart since that race. I think it was so bad last time, but who knows? Maybe something just went wrong. It just doesn't seem like that much of a field. The other division is obviously much stronger, and I think in the other division that Nadal is a little bit suspect in there. You know, he did run well last time, but the pace wasn't as outrageous. It might look, given if you compare it to Serengeti Empress. But he was pressed hard, but he was also down at the inside. And the rail got very good late in the day, particularly on that card. And he's going to face real pressure in this race, I would think. I mean, I can't imagine that King Guillermo isn't going to be aggressive. Wells Bayou is going. I mean, you know, Brad Cox and Giroux have been very clear what they're doing with this horse. I'm a little bit circumspect of him. I think it's a much more interesting race. I think Guillermo, who knows if King Guillermo's not a real horse, right? I mean, he ran very well last time. I don't want to just dismiss him. Well, maybe he's really a good horse. I don't think Storm the Court is good enough, but I think he'll probably run pretty well in here. I don't think Tyshawn is good enough, but he did actually run pretty well in the Oaklawn Stake, and I thought he ran a better race in a lot of ways than Farmington Road because he did more dirty work. The Silver Prospector, I think it's at least worth entertaining, Steve, that he may not like a wet track at Oaklawn. I know people see he ran well on it at Churchill, but his two stinkers are wet tracks at Oaklawn. And, you know, he did kind of steady him in the stretch. I don't think he was going anywhere, but he was sort of stayed out. And while at Southwest he got a very good trip that day, he still ran a good enough race to be a contender. And I think he's very vulnerable. I'm not saying he can't win, because obviously he can, but I thought he was vulnerable, Steve.
I think that's a reasonable approach, because I thought that there was a lot of intrigue floating around in here.
The Oakland Park handicap came up just a terrific race. It'll be interesting to see what Trophy Chaser does against a more competitive field. But he's, you know, his last two races have been legitimately strong. I think King for a Day, you know, people remember the horse that finished ahead of Maxim Security.
Yep.
Despite Maxim Security's trainer being concerned that he would fail a test, so creating a fake thing. So even with a stumble at the start, that's almost miraculous. And Mr. Freeze ran maybe one of the best races we saw in this country this year when he won the Elsewhere Mile, but I think a mile and eight may be a little bit of a question for him. And, you know, Dale can find out, is he a horse that he needs to be looking at races like, you know, the Met and the Forgo as opposed to the Met and the Whitney, right? To see how he does in a race like this. I know Warrior's Charge is going to go. I don't think he's good enough. I'm a fan of his, but I just don't think he's really good enough. But you know he's going to go. And listen, Improbable ran very well. And I don't, the post 14 isn't as big a deal as 11 was in a mile because there's a lot of run in the first turn. He has the speed to be forward enough that I think he could be in a very similar spot to Cece, right? In the Apple Blossom, where he's able to get that position. So I don't think he's impossible. He ran well, and I don't think that he should be just disregarded a mile and eight. But it's not as though his Kentucky Derby was horrendous. He's kind of a horse that's it's interesting with Improbable Atastasis in here. You've got two horses that a lot of people like to knock. Tacitus, I think the knocking of him is idiotic, but that's just my opinion. And I think Tacitus is going to be very tough in this race. I don't see why he doesn't make a lot of sense. The other thing is they can go back to the style that probably suits him best, which is to relax him early. I think they may have gotten a little bit, may have read some of the poor opinions on him and felt he needed to be more forwardly placed. I don't. He's a horse who has enough speed to put himself in the game, but I don't see any reason why he was so forward in the Travers and Jockey Club. And I think in here, he's obviously not fast enough to be up front, so they can relax a little bit more. And I expect Haskell to run well in here.
What do you do with By My Standards and the, all the horses coming out of New Orleans?
Well, I don't see By My Standards at all. I thought he just got an absolutely perfect trip. And he got very fortunate in the last race. Because I don't remember who the horse was, but maybe it was a horse of Brett Calhoun that was the speed and didn't break. So I believe he had to rush up and make this move to get the lead that just kind of eliminated his chances. And the horse of Todd Fletcher's, who was one of the co-favorites in that race, just got a ridiculous trip as well. And so he got this perfect trip while the two major contenders were hampered by bad trips, and I think that just made his job very easy. I suppose he's improved a little bit, but I don't know. I didn't think he was good enough. Who else?
Well, there's you got the top. I think you have what the three of the you got the top three finishers all showing up from that race. Captivating Moon, who's got.
But every one of them benefited from the misfortune of the others in there. I don't like anybody out of that race. So, no, I'm not seeing them. Okay. You've got Tax, who I just don't think is good enough. But listen, his race with performance was good in Discovery, and he did lose all chance at the start of the Pegasus. I thought he was a cut below, but he's not utterly impossible, I suppose. You've got Combatant, who won the Sandy to Handicap. It was kind of a grade three edition of the Sandy to Handicap, but it was what it was, but I think people should remember that Endorse was 3-1 in that race and finished fifth, speaking of Kieran, and I just don't know if Endorse is really that good, but he's not terrible, right? So I guess he's not. I guess we'll see what Combatant does. It's certainly not impossible.
It's fun. It's a fun group.
Yeah, no, it's a sensational race. It's my opinion. Doesn't make him right, but it's an excellent race. You go to the card, there's 12. They let 14. There are 14 running in some races, and if there's only 12, it's pretty much, except the two after the Arkansas Derby, it's pretty much 12 and two also eligibles. I've handicapped four races fully, and I've got another three or four to look at and finish up today, and every one of them is a full field with also eligibles. I guess there's only 11 in the that's Friday. I know you're excited about the Arkansas Arkansas Breds in the 7th, the Arkansas Breeders' Championship. You probably were penciled in to present the trophy for that race.
You're going to laugh. We looked at, I tried Moquette after Whitmore won. Moquette said, "You got to come down here." And I actually looked. I actually looked to see.
Really? She was willing.
She was willing. She's climbing the walls too. She's ready for some adventure.
She had to play and fly to Arkansas.
That was the problem. That was the problem because Southwest is limited.
The height there.
almost. So I abandoned the consideration of traveling. So, but I did take a peek. I did think about it.
That's great news.
Well, we had fun. We had fun was that last year? It feels like 10 years ago.
I had a great time. Believe me, I look forward to going back there. I don't have anything negative to say about Oklahoma. It was a great time.
No, of course not.
Yeah, no. I'm being serious. I had a great time. I'd love to go again. I imagine I will go again sometime. If I was retired, I'd go there for a couple of weeks and hang out. Good racing.
No.
Yes. No, I have only nice things to say about it. Why wouldn't I?
Absolutely.
Or nice. Good.
Give everybody the. Do we know the times? Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What the broadcast?
4-7 Eastern on Friday, I believe. FS1. 1-8 or 1-8:30 on Saturday.
Wow.
And I don't. Sunday we're on from 3 hours, I believe. I don't know the exact times of that show, though, but it's Tampa. So whenever, you know, roughly around when Tampa's running.
It's probably 3 to 6.
I won't be on the whole 1 to 8. Nobody will, but I'll be on for a good portion of it.
Nice.
Maggie will be on as well. And
that's great.
Yeah, and Tom and Jonathan and, you know, the rest of the crew, the guys who've been holding it down while we've been lazily laying around at home doing nothing. Well, Maggie's not doing anything. She's got a new baby to raise.
Yeah.
She's got a new baby. So, you know, I just have the same old baby I'm living with myself.
What, you know, we had, speaking of Amos, had Amos yesterday, and he was trying to lay running no parole two turns at my feet. And he said, you know, Steve, you and the rest of the media, you pressure us to run, you know, these three-year-olds on the Derby trail. I said, well, there's one pundit who wasn't going to let you get away with that.
Well, I think, you know, if you have a horse that's run as fast as that one did, I think it's fair to try it. But I think, you know, what separates Tom, you know, Tom is an unusual guy in that, and I kid him a lot. But, you know, you hear Tom is extremely forthright. You know, obviously, I'm sure at times he's ruffled people's feathers, you know, other trainers, and he makes comments. But Tom is as critical of himself as he would be of anybody else. In fact, he's probably more critical of himself than he would be of others. You know, you hear him talk about Serengeti Empress. He's extremely upfront about the fact that she's very good in the lead, but without the lead, she's a non-contender. And it's not as though he defends her. He knows who she is and what her quirks are. And when Tom, you know, they ran in that sort of uncompetitive race at Delta Downs or something going two turns. But then, okay, you know, you got to try the Rebel. But once it became clear in the Rebel that this is not a horse that's going to perform at a high level going long, but might be a horse that can perform at a high level going short outside of just, you know, Louisiana bred. It's not as bad to be running against them either. The money's good, et cetera. But he went back to sprinting, and Tom realized that, you know, it's like, I'll give you an example of a horse, and I'm not looking to be too harsh on anybody, but Scabbard. I know Scabbard ran well in his first time around two turns. But in his first couple of starts this year, it was very clear that he's not a router. It's not clear, maybe he's just not very good anymore. That's certainly a possibility. But it's also possible that he could be good as a sprinter, as he was when he won, when he ran well in Saratoga, right? He ran second, I want to say, to Green Lyco. What's the name?
Green Lyco, yeah.
Right. I keep thinking of Green Means Go, that motto was from years ago. Then they ran him at Oakland in a mile race. I understand it's hard sometimes, you know, certain races come up in the condition book. I don't know what he was doing in there. It's like that horse Keep and Flew I was talking about on Twitter. Why is he keep getting entered going long? He's proven that he's not a router. You know, run these horses where they can win. And I think one of the reasons you'll see horses be more successful is that they have an opportunity to be successful. If they're continually running spots where they can run their best race and run fourth, whether they're over their head or the wrong distance or the wrong surface or whatever, you're not going to be able to maximize their talents. And Tom obviously realizes that No Parole probably has distance limitations, especially at a higher level, but he ran very well. I mean, he won quite in hand last on Friday. He was only overshadowed because Tom's horse Long Weekend ran such a nice race in being a very good horse of Steve Asperson's in that stake, The Bachelor.
So yes.
Tom's got a couple of good sprinters on his hands. And I think with Tom, while he may take shots when it's the right time to take a shot, he's going to give them an opportunity to succeed. And if he takes a shot, you know, let's say he, you know, decides to, you know, let's, you know, presuming we run and we run the Woody Stevens, let's say, for example, Tom takes a long weekend and he runs Woody Stevens, and he gets his head handed to him. I think Tom's going to be reticent about running him in a race like the Amsterdam of Saratoga. If he runs a competitive race, even without winning, you can run there. But I don't think Tom's looking to run these horses for the sake of running. Now, listen, owners obviously come into play sometimes. But in general, the most you can ask for from your trainer is to spot the horses where they have their best chance to be successful.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're going to win. But you want to see them have their chance. Doesn't mean you also don't try, especially with young three-year-olds. I understand why Scabbard was running those races at the time he was. You know, he ran that good second to Dale's horse, who at that time seemed like it was the best two-year-old in the country. And he ran well enough to try it again. But, you know, maybe one of those things, the first time going two turns, whatever. But this is not a horse that's going to, that appears to be effective going long. Once again, maybe they'll come back to sprint. He just can't run anymore. That's also possible. But I hope for their sake not.
No, I appreciate, and you know, you've.
Well, I don't mean to pick on those horses. I'm thinking,
no, you're not picking on them. You're pointing out realities that, you know, that confront horsemen on a regular basis, and you know, owners, you know, I know sometimes certainly owners might be right about taking, you know, shots, you know, but for the most part. You know, the trainer is going to have a good understanding.
Well, I think you need a trainer to be able to say to an owner, we're not doing the right thing by your horse and subsequently not doing the right thing by you. And you need a trainer that respects the owner, an owner that respects the trainer enough to listen
yes.
to him. It doesn't mean that owners shouldn't have input. They're paying the bills. They have every right to have input. But you have to have the kind of relationship where maybe there's some disagreement, but the owner says, okay, you really want to run here. Trainer says, we'll run here. But it's against my better judgment. And if the horse doesn't perform well, it's not like the trainer's rooting against him. He doesn't mind being wrong. He still wants to win, you know. But, you know, once that happens, you have to be willing to take a step back and say, okay, let's go to the plan, your plan, see how that works. It's easy for us to sit here. Certainly easy for me to sit here and say it. I'm not a trainer. I don't have these conversations with owners. And a lot, listen, one of the trainer's biggest jobs, and I'm sure any trainer would tell you this, is to take the blame for owner decisions. You're not going to hear a trainer come out after a race unless he wants to get fired and say, I didn't want to run in that race. The owner made me run. But we all know a lot of times the horse has run, and you've read people saying, what was that idiot doing running there? And it's like, well, he didn't want to run there. The owner wanted to run there. And, you know, there was an idiot, but it wasn't the trainer. But trainers suck it up. And that's a big part of their jobs, right? Looking stupid for their owners sometimes. Not always.
Well, that's
right?
that's one of the great moments in recent memory. Actually, was when I asked Jim Cassidy. I said, Jim, what happened here? I forget what the horse was. He said, oh, that was an OD. I said, an OD? He said, yeah, an owner decision. That was great.
And by the way, there's also stories, I'm sure, where owners have been encouraging to run in races where trainers didn't want to run, or have won, to be fair. It's not as though every owner is just wrong because he's an owner.
No, no, of course not.
Right,
of course
he's a trainer, you know?
Well, I'll ask you.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you who, and this could be anecdotal and provincial, but who, in your experience, is an owner that is almost always right about that and about placing the horses with the trainer going against them and trying to convince them to, you know, run higher? I got somebody in mind.
I don't know.
Aaron Yagoda.
Well, Aaron is realistic.
Yes.
Aaron doesn't have any ego. Aaron would be an owner that would say, I'm the idiot that wanted to run there. But Aaron would run in a spot for a good reason. So I don't know. Aaron's on the plateau of very smart owners and good owners. Not just that. I don't think Aaron is forcing his trainers to do too many stupid things.
I've seen him in a spot and where it looks like he's daring people to take a horse and he's just running, you know, running where.
Running in races. That's a very different. That's a very different situation. Claiming horses, very different situation.
It's an interesting. This is an interesting discussion, actually.
It's hard. I would think it's one of the more difficult parts of being a trainer.
Oh,
because you get a horse ready, and then it doesn't happen all the time. Most of the time, the trainer makes all the decisions. It normally is going to happen more often if you have a horse that's gotten pretty good, right? And, you know,
exactly.
Run some stake races.
Yep.
You know, listen, I mean, trainers, I'm sure, can tell you that they've had some delusions of grandeur, as they say, with their horses as well, where they run a good race and they think they're better than they are. you know. And I think that everything's a learning experience, right? If you're a trainer that has had some success but hasn't had better horses, you get a stakes quality horse, it's a learning experience on how you're going to handle them. And all those things are, they're not that easy. Easy for us. Easier for us not being involved. I mean, there have been occasional moments I've been had some input into situations, but not too often. I don't want to be.
So, well, you, whenever you've counseled me, when it comes to our horses, you've been right.
With her, it's more of a distance thing with that filly of yours. Anyhow, who's up next?
Jeremy Plonk and Brian Spencer.
Oh, tell Brian I said hi. Good guy. I'll go. Absolutely. You can talk to them.
Fair enough. Listen, we're looking forward to Friday and Saturday, Sunday, Andy. Fox Sports 1, everybody, the Naira produced shows, and they're going to be, I mean, obviously 7.5 hours on Saturday, the Arkansas Derby Day, and should be just tremendous. 3 hours on Friday, 3 hours on Sunday. Looking forward to watching, Andy. Thank you.
Thanks. Looking forward to doing it, and I'll talk to you later.
Andy Serling, everybody. New York Racing Association, and follow what Andy's got going on Twitter. He's keeping everybody entertained. Watch. Don't just vote in the poll. Watch the videos that Andy links up to and follow the discussion about the individual horses, because 2 weeks in a row, we haven't had a chance to discuss this, but there's this crazy recency bias on these polls, where horses that are just, you know, top of mind and probably, you know, a wider number of people probably, you know, or might be that much more familiar. But don't let recency bias take the opportunity to learn about horses that might have been, you know, crafting careers before you became a horse player and a fan. Because there's been some horses who haven't gotten many votes that would have absolutely blown some of the winners of the polls out of the water, without a doubt. Taking a break, last of the morning. We'll spend the last 20 minutes with Jeremy, and I think with Brian too. I haven't gotten a confirmation from Brian. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really?
Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Exactly 20 minutes to fill out this full and busy Tuesday. It's Tuesday, right? Yeah, I must admit, even I'm getting a little lost on the days of the week. I said to Tina on Sunday, we were watching Oakland. I said, it's Sunday, right? Yeah, it is. Waiting here. Jeremy Plonk joining us. I hear in the background. Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. It is Tuesday. I'll confirm that. Check with me in 24 hours, though.
Well, and I knew it was Tuesday earlier because I reached out for you a couple of weeks without Countdown to the Crown while it was a little quiet. But we are back in business when it comes to Saturday's activity. Two Arkansas Derbies to fill out your Derby Day pleasure, and without a Kentucky Derby, it'll have to satisfy.
Well, look, they certainly came up with quite a few big name horses. You know, I mean, this is an awfully good double cast that we get. Obviously, the second division much much stronger than the first in terms of total depth, but you sandwich the Oakland handicap in between there, and it sure has a big race day feel about it, you know. And I kind of feel like there was a little take back last week amongst players kind of gearing up for this week, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. that calm before the storm that you usually feel before a big race week. I think that was kind of evident last weekend, and I think we're going to see just absolutely huge numbers this week where everybody who kind of put a little extra in the pocket for the big day coming are going to come and unload here on Saturday. Should be a huge handle day. Gulfstream's got a trio of stakes races as well. So between those two tracks, I think people are really going to send it in this weekend.
Well, historically, of course, is the start of the classic season, and there's certainly going to be plenty of television coverage. I mean, between whatever yeah. NBC is doing, and they've got the Triple Crown Fantasy Derby that Churchill is offered up as a fundraiser and for COVID support and relief, and just had Andy Serling on. They're doing on Fox 7.5 hours from 1 to 8:30 on Saturday. So pretty much where anybody turns, I think, spinning the dial, there's going to be racing coverage on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm having flashbacks to years ago where I used to do, I worked for ESPN and NBC at the Triple Crown races, and we'd come on about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning on ESPN, crew call it like 7 to 8 a.m. and work on the set all day with those guys. And as soon as the preps got over, try to sprint across and get through security where I needed to get through for NBC, and then be on those shows. And then ESPN would come back with the post game shows. ESPN News was kind of new back then, and they had an hour post game show after the Triple Crown races, and we were in the dark broadcasting that one. That sounds like about right, about a 7.5-8 hour broadcast day. It is Triple Crown time, so maybe We ought to just keep following that same pattern. Yeah, I don't know what the additional TV on NBC. You know, I mean, there'd be some viewers. I think the main bulk of that three-hour telecast will be a look back at American Pharoah's Triple Crown run. I think that's the main bulk, a full-length run of the show from the 2015 Kentucky Derby. Then the segment of the, you know, the computer-generated Triple Crown race will appear at the end of that broadcast, from what I was told by somebody who's working on that show. So, you know, that'll be interesting, the last couple minutes of it. But, I mean, if you're a racing fan, you're not sitting around watching American Pharoah from 2015 when there's great racing going on from Oaklawn. So a lot of people are going to be tuned into the other channels certainly during that time. But, you know, there's a little bit of interest in, oh, who would win that you know, the computer-generated race amongst the Triple Crown winners. But, you know, there's so much good racing going on. You know, like, that would be great to have on a day when we didn't have a lot of great racing going. But I'm going to make the assumption it had something to do that that was the big buy time. You know, that was the big block time for the main Derby telecast from 3 to 6. And they're just keeping that and honoring that and rolling through with the broadcast there, thinking there's people who are interested in the Derby. NBCSN will show the Arkansas Derby through the TVG feed then after the 6 o'clock, I think 6 to 7 o'clock or 6 to 8 o'clock hour, I guess, to catch both divisions.
Interesting. Okay. So that part of it, I had not gotten the details. So between MSNBC and between Fox Sports 1, that'll be the, you know, that'll be the live action. Fox mm-hmm. Sports 1 will also have Tampa. And I guess, yeah, and I suppose MSNBC will have Oaklawn and Gulfstream. So they'll
there won't be a separate broadcast for the Arkansas Derby from MSNBC NBCSN, but it will be the TVG feed.
Right. Which has been, I kind of wandered into it the other, I guess it was last, this past weekend, actually. Let's talk about things, Jeremy, dive in. We got about 14 minutes to talk about the two divisions and your thoughts coming in. And are you doing a countdown, full countdown page?
Yeah, we'll have it on Friday. We'll preview both divisions and rock through it the way that we normally do and go through and make final picks.
Sweet.
The beauty of it getting these Sunday entries is, you know, we've already been looking at it for a couple of days and going through some peripheral handicapping. You know, in the first division, if you just want to pick up there, I mean, Charlatan's going to be a strong favorite. Given the field size, you know, how low will he go is really the question. I could legitimately see him being bet as low as 3 to 5 in there. I mean, I think he's really going to get pounded. There's not a lot of speed in the race. I mean, how do you get 11 three-year-olds together like this, and there's just not much pace at all? So the lone speed or the real true speed of the race draws the rail. Martin Garcia and Bob Pappert are 5 for 5 together at the meet with Shippers Inn. When Bob gets Martin, I mean, they're just clicking at Oaklawn, and speed from the rail, which is never a bad thing on a big race day at any track in America, and he looks to be potential lone speed. I mean, Basin from the far outside, maybe they try to send a little bit, you know. I mean, Basin's kind of come up empty in the back end of his races, so maybe he just needs to be like right up in the mix throughout and take his chances from there instead of being like a pounce type, because he hasn't pounced with any quality. You know, Basin's brisk late pace figures and his two races at the meet were 69 and 69, consistently weak. I mean, and now he's going to go the mile and an eighth again like he did in the Oaklawn Stakes from the far outside post. So to me, like, you know, the classiest horse on paper that you would look to line up and say, well, if you're going to take down Charlatan, you know, Basin might be the one. But from the 11 hole and a propensity not to punch at the end of his races, that doesn't look like the right recipe to defeat Charlatan. So if somebody's going to beat him, you know, I don't think it's going to be that runner. You know, Todd's got Governor Morrison here, who probably is better than what he showed in the Florida Derby. But, you know, that race was a little disappointing and flat. You know, Tis the Law winning it by 4, there's no shame in that running behind him. But, you know, Chivalry running 2nd in that race and S.A. Indian holding for 3rd, you just figured Governor Morse would have a little bit more than that. 2nd off the layoff, he should have been really ready to punch a good one, and he didn't. But Todd Fletcher's won the Arkansas Derby 5 times, Steve, and he's done it with horses that aren't necessarily superstars. You know, Magnum Moon, Danza, Overanalyze, Balto Star, Graham Hall. These are not on, you know, if you get Pletcher's list of his 20 best horses in his history, they're not on it, and they are his five Arkansas Derby winners. So he could win this race with a horse the ilk of Governor Morris, but I would think Charlatan's going to have to not handle the assignment to get beat in that first division. He's either not going to get the distance, not handle the trip, or not handle the class. Now, that's three things he's got to answer, but he looks like the right horse, you know. I know some people might say Mile and an Eighth by Spikestown, that's not really what you want to see, but look, the bottom of that pedigree is awfully solid. Authenticity, the mare of Charlatan. She won the Shoe V at 9 furlongs. She was third to Beholder in closed hatches in the Breeders' Cup Distaff when she actually outfinished, you know, Bill Mott's big filly in there. So, you know, the Royal Delta. So the pedigree on the bottom side should get Charlatan the distance, and the pace scenario should get him the distance as well. I just think he's too tough.
Can't argue. And you mentioned the 3-5, John White, yesterday. John had put together a morning line for the race himself, and he went straight to 3-5 for Charlatan. Let's turn to the more competitive, and Andy Serling, too, just kind of fleshed out the competitiveness of the second division and the potential underlay that Nadal may end up being in here. There's waves of competition.
There is. And, like, you know, we've all had Nadal highly respected, you know, since his debut win. And he did the San Vicente in three quarters of a length workmanlike fashion over Ginobili, who hasn't come back to do much since. That he won the Rebel Stakes by three quarters of a length. And, you know, Accession and Basin were in there. And we just said Basin's not a finisher. He's just not finishing his races. So does Nadal win another one wire to wire or near the front by a narrow margin? Possibly, but he looks to be the underlay of the group. You know, Baffert's had the favorite six of the last 9 years in the Arkansas Derby, but he's won with two of those six. So, I mean, 33% winning favorite, that's kind of national average kind of thing. But when you think Bob Baffert favorite for the Arkansas Derby, you're thinking, look, these are the kind of horses you're singling in wagers. Charlatan looks much stronger in the first division than Nadal does in the second. And that's not to say in a head-to-head matchup which one, you know, I think is the better horse, because frankly I'm not quite sure. But I think Charlatan has more natural ability, but I could be wrong there. But Nadal's got much more competition to take on and much more pace competition. You know, the way this race sets up is a lot different than what Charlatan has. The speed on the outside of Wells Bayou in the 11 hole, you know, I talk about this all the time. When speed is in an extreme post position, it ratchets up the pace. And so with Wells Bayou in the 11, Florent Giroux's got to be aggressive. This is a horse who almost won the Southwest on the front end. Then the best move I've seen any trainer make this year was when Brad Cox looked at the Rebel field and he looked at the Louisiana Derby, and they skipped the Rebel, because that Rebel looked like it was going to be very tough on the front end. Remember, No Parole was in that race. Nadal went to the front and essentially wired it. That was a tough-paced race. That was a tough race shape for Wells Bayou. So they skipped that race when Mr. Monomoy was injured and may have been the favorite for the Louisiana Derby. Cox goes Plan B. Wells Bayou goes there. And that, to me, was the smartest move I've seen on the trail this year. And Wells Bayou got the job done there in the Louisiana Derby. He's got a completely different scenario in this race, though, than what he had over in New Orleans. So you've got what looks to be a strong pace. Storm the Court should be pretty forward in there. Wells Bayou, Nadal, some others in there. Maybe the Saratoga and the Maiden for Rudolph Brisset, you know, goes a little bit and tries to take him as far as he can on a bit of a stretch out. So I think that race is a lot stronger pace-wise, and certainly a lot deeper. We'll see. Who's the closer in there? That to me is like, who do you want to finish? King Guillermo's never been far off the pace, but, you know, they went fairly slow in the Tampa Bay Derby, right? 48 to the half, 112. So he was up close to a slower pace, but boy, did he punch home big in that race. He got a 107 late pace figure from Briss, which was massive in that race. King Guillermo, you know, is the old, you didn't get him at 49-1 at the wedding, so why go to the funeral when he's going to be a much shorter price? I don't agree with the morning line at 3-1. I think he'll be twice that or a little bit more. I think he's somewhere around 6 or 8-1. But he's got, you know, a good finishing kick in that last race. He didn't really show that necessarily in his previous races. So I'm looking for a finisher in here. And, you know, I'm not sure who it is. I mean, if I get really stupid, I mean, you look at a horse like Finnick the Fierce with the jock change to Martin Garcia, second race over the track. And, you know, he was a horse who was kind of plugging along in New Orleans, and now he's going to get a fast pace to run into from the rail, save all the ground early. I could see somebody going crazy with Finnick the Fierce, or Farmington Road would be, you know, a logical closer in there for Pletcher. Again, we mentioned Pletcher's won this race five times, and Farmington Road gets in at 118 based on the weight, so he gets 4 pounds from the Dahlin, from Silver Prospector, and Storm the Court. You know, a lot of the favorites in here are going to carry 122. Farmington Road gets 4 pounds, and he's going to get a pace to run into. So he certainly could be a contender in there under Castellano.
Silver Prospector could sit kind of a mid-pack trip.
Yep.
Andy's suggesting, you know, that the Rebel shouldn't be held too much against him. I agree with Finnick. Of course, the one problem with Finnick, he won from the rail in that allowance race with Garcia, but you know, the one eye situation does not help him. And you know, with 10 other horses, we'll have to see. I'll have to go back and watch that replay. I want to go back and see what exactly Garcia did with him. He looked like he got some early position, even though he didn't break great. And I'm gonna have to watch that replay because I don't remember that race clearly.
And he's probably a stretch, you know, but I'm saying that's the kind of style that we're looking for. I think, I don't think you're going to beat Nadal like wire to wire. I don't think like Wells Bayou goes in front of him and that's how the race is won, you know. I think if you beat Nadal, it's somebody from off the pace coming by the pace that softens up. You know, I can see Storm the Court running the best race he's run this year, you know. You know, I'm kind of down on him over the winter. He's gotten, you know, progressively a little better. He's working okay. You know, two-year-old champs have done pretty well in this race, at Classic Empire, American Pharoah, among them. So, you know, he's got a license to be, you know, right in the mix with these horses, and he's drawn well in the three-hole. This is a tough race, and, you know, it's one of those where you almost force yourself to go try to take a price, you know. But where will the prices be? You know, it really depends how hard they get on Nadal, right? I mean, if they bet Nadal down heavy and he's odds on, then that's going to give you value on a lot of horses. If Nadal's a little more lukewarm, 8-5, 9-5, then you're looking at a situation where, you know, most of the main contenders might get covered in here. And if you're going to try to pull an upset in this race and you only get 5 or 6-1, I don't know that that's enough, you know. To take a swing against several pretty good horses and only get 5 or 6-1. To me, this looks like a good spread race for the multi-race wager. So, you know, single in on Charlatan in the 12th, or in the 11th, and then in the Oakland handicap, if you can come up with a real strong opinion in there, you know, that would help you. I think you want to spread a little bit here in the 13th. And, of course, the 14th, the Trail's End, is always the last race of the year at Oakland Park, a mile and three quarters. It's a traditional race, but that's going to screw a lot of people up here on Arkansas Derby Day with pick fours and pick fives that end in a mile and three quarters race. Be interesting to see who people end up with in there.
Well, and typically it's a race that a Oakland specialist invariably seems to excel. And if you look outside to Randy Matthews, has got that Wild About You, who's, you know, in the money 9 out of 14 at Oaklawn and has won at the distance, and feels like, you know, one of the ones. Haven't seen, you mentioned the morning line. The morning line is up now on for Arkansas Derby Day, actually. I see it on Timeform US is already posted. And then there's the Rogue, John Cox with the Rogue Diesel, who's another, you know, kind of looks like a horse that was particularly, you know, picking this spot out. The trainers historically have, I learned that over the last few years with my trips to Oaklawn. Well, we'll continue Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to get people ready for this. And speaking of being ready, that includes Countdown to the Crown at horseplayernow.com with Jeremy and with Brian W. Spencer. We didn't get to reach today, but the Buzz Report has been tearing it up and helping people, and certainly Friday and Saturday. I imagine people should add that to their list of pundit resources, Jeremy.
Absolutely, and a lot of extended coverage, including some Eddie Olchek action this weekend at ExpressBet.com. Extended coverage for the Oaklawn races. So
fun. Awesome. Jeremy Plonk, everybody. Horse Player Now on your Twitter and horseplayernow.com. This morning flew by. It started with Boyd Browning, and appreciated Boyd getting us complete update on the sale situation. Stanley Huff, always one of our favorites. The extended visit with Kieran McLaughlin, Andy Serling, and Jeremy. Tomorrow, Zach Madden is going to join us from the sales side. Pin hooking and more consignments, and to get some reaction from him. And of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale with Sid Fernando. And just seeing on Twitter, by the way, Brian Spears is taken ill, and have him in our thoughts. Friend of many on Twitter, and hope. Wow. Hope it sounds a little. I said Brian. Brian Spencer on the mind. Barry Spears. Hope he's all right. Thinking about him. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Fonner later this afternoon at the evening, and Will Rogers, including the TROA stake. Talk to you in the morning.
With Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.